copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
The question of whether the Bible is sexist. At first view, it seems pretty clear that it is. There are around 3,000 named characters in the Bible, but fewer than 150 of those named characters are women. By some counts, it's fewer than that, meaning less than 5% of the named individuals in the Bible are women. So we could say it's absolutely futile to try and argue that the Bible treats men and women equally. Here is how one popular study put it. It counts that there are only 93 women in the Bible, and when you look at the speech in the Bible, they get 1.1% of all of the things that are said. Compare that with all the things that the men say. Well, isn't it outrageous? Why isn't the Bible fairer? Why isn't it more equal? Surely we're in a society where things should be equal. This is an outrage. Well, let's just think about equality for a little while. What exactly is equality? Think of the tragic events that took place in Nice as that terrorist attacked many people. You could argue that that terrorist treated people equally. Men, women, children, all treated equally and horrifically. So clearly just being treated equally isn't enough. After all, here's a picture of Cuba. Communists love to treat people equally. I know it's not quite as simple as that. Some of you know that far better than I do. But the theory is, let's treat people equally, but then we recognise it may not be the best thing. Or think about some Western secular equality. Here is a neighbour of mine, Professor Stephen Hawking, and this is what he has to say. The human race is just a chemical scum on a moderate-sized planet orbiting around a very average star in the outer suburb of one among 100 billion galaxies. We are so insignificant that I can't believe the whole universe exists for our benefit. That would be like saying, you would disappear if I closed my eyes. So you see, equality. Professor Stephen Hawking offers you a vision of equality. Men and women absolutely equal. And being chemical scum. Or look how it works out in China. Now, China, communist country, secular country. And then what happens? Well, you look at the ratio of male to female births. Now, there is fact that, and it's hard to measure, whereby men and women aren't born quite in equal numbers. So there may be slightly more men born, but what you see is, of course, when it comes to the sex that people are born with in China, you find that it's close to 120 boys being born for every 100 girls. Why? Because of abortion. And so what we find is that when it comes to the application of some of the secular ideas, it's the women who come off worst. But you say, aha, but that's just patriarchal China using patriarchy on top of a secular system. Well, why is it that globally trafficking is 70% female? Seems pretty clear to me that a lot of that is not because people believe that the women will be able to lift more, but it is because of the sex industry. And then we look at the most secularized continent in the globe, which I would argue is Europe, and we find that it's 80% female trafficking. These are EU figures. So we think about it. The more secularism has taken root, how much has that meant that women have got a better deal? Of course, what happens is secularism leads to a simple commoditization of the humans, therefore a sexualization, commoditization of sex, and so on. So we find that 22% of European women have experienced non-partner violence since the age of 15. About 5% of women would say they have been raped since the age of 15. This is a terrible statistic. Or we look over in the US, where the United States porn industry is bigger by dollars than the US sports industry and the US live music industry put together. In other words, people are offering you a secular vision of equality, of women's liberation, and I want to suggest to you that in many ways it is a con. What is the value of old people within secularism? Well, secularism tends to view people for what they're able to offer to society. Therefore, actually, it's thought that older people contribute less, and so we actually find that they're not being treated so well. Contrast that with a biblical view of equality. Now, a biblical view of equality goes like this. We are all in the image of God. Now, explaining that term, in the image of God, I want to unpack it because it's one of those phrases that rolls off the tongue amongst Christians so much that we may not think exactly what it means. Well, what is an image? An image is a 3D picture, if you like. So we talk about 3D printing nowadays, and an image is simply that. It's a physical 3D representation of something. So we could put it like this. Every individual is a picture of God. Now, that doesn't mean every individual perfectly reflects God. We're fallen, and we are also creatures and finite. We do not share all of God's characteristics. But what Christians believe is that every individual is a picture of God and therefore is of infinite value. When any human is lost to the human race, we lose a unique picture of God, someone who, by all sorts of aspects about them, points us to God. That means that every image is utterly irreplaceable. There is an infinite value. Now contrast that with Stephen Hawking's view of being a chemical scum. And it seems to me that while Christians may not be able to claim that the Bible treats people equally, male and female have different representation numbers, for instance, within the Bible, what we can say is that the Bible treats men and women as having infinite value. Secularism, which seems to offer a lot, actually does not offer anything like so much to women. So we contrast. Christianity says that we are in the image of God. Secularism offers equality. Christians say every individual is of infinite value. They've got to be treated with dignity, with justice. And their worth is not connected to what they can do. A newborn baby, an unborn baby, may not be able to contribute to society. Someone with a terrible disability, mental, someone who is paraplegic, someone who has got dementia, may not be able to offer much society. They may be able to in the compassion they draw out from us and the character transformation they actually are able to bring about in those who care for them. But the point is this, their worth is not connected to what they contribute. On the other hand, within secularism, what we find is this vague notion of equality, which happens to be applied in certain socially constructed ways, where we say this sort of equality really matters. And it's worth recognizing that so much of the value of people is related to their contribution. So what can we say about the Bible, this book that seems to have so few mentions of women, at least according to the statistics? Well, I want to suggest to you that there are 8 points in the Bible, there are more, but these are just the ones I'm going to bring out for you, where women play a really remarkable role. I want to begin with one of the most sordid stories in the Bible, which is that in Genesis 38, where you remember that Judah has had 3 sons. 2 of them were wicked and have been killed by God. There is the 3rd son, and he really should be given to Tamar, the wife of the 1st son. Tamar is a Canaanitess. And that doesn't happen, and so Tamar dresses up as a prostitute, and when her father-in-law is going past, he doesn't recognize who she is. He goes into her. She gets pregnant. When he hears of this, not knowing that it was he who made her pregnant, he says, let her be burnt, until she says, aha, this is the proof that it was you. And then he says, okay then, you won't be burnt, you know. So you see, yes, it is a story which highlights, in fact, the unfairness of that man using his position of authority over against her, and he has to say she was right. But what's interesting is that here we have a large narrative about one woman's initiative. Why is it there? Because she becomes the ancestor of David, from whom all of the kings in the Bible come, and from whom Jesus comes. In other words, it's a really vital bit of story about the line leading to the Messiah. If that Canaanite woman had not taken that initiative, Jesus would have different DNA. So think about the whole of the messianic history hangs on that lady's action. Now, in terms of significance of action for subsequent history, I can't really think of anything greater. Then we have, in Egypt, Pharaoh trying to kill the young boys. Well, who is it who rescues the young boys but these two midwives? And we find that Shifra and Pua have this wonderful work of making sure the boys are born alive. So whereas the messianic line could be cut off by, it's threatened, who rescues it but two women? Then we find another point shortly afterwards in the story, where Rahab is a Canaanite woman who changes sides to the Israelites. And she actually, according to Matthew 1, becomes a progenitor of Jesus. Or you could have the point when David is old, and perhaps he is also impotent because of excessive exposure to variety earlier in his life. And what we find is that Bathsheba here comes in and says, you've got to make sure that Solomon becomes king, and she manages to sway the dynastic line, whereas it would have been Adonijah who'd been usurping. Then we find that's Bathsheba, another Sheba, Jehosheba, who, when Athaliah is about to wipe out the kingly line, hides the young king Joash. She's the high priest's daughter. Or you think about how Esther saves the Jews when they're about to be wiped out. And then you think about the amazing action of Mary, mother of Jesus, who accepts the angel's command and the mission that she has from the Lord. And by the way, if we put Mary alongside Zechariah, both of whom mentioned at the beginning of Luke, we ask, who is portrayed more favourably? I would have thought we'd think that Mary was. In fact, when we look at the Gospels generally and ask who comes better off, the men or the women, I would think that the women are more favourably portrayed. That is why, of course, the women get to be there at the most ever significant event in the entire history of the globe. There can be no more significant event than being there to be the first women at the tomb. So what we find is, time and time again, women may not play as many roles as men, but they play really highly significant roles. So whereas the men may get their names in big letters and they get more lines and they get to be louder, when you actually look at significance, what this is telling us is that men and women are both very significant, but different. They play different but significant roles. And when people object that the Bible is sexist, they're often objecting that the Bible says distinct things about men and women. But their objection does not go deep enough. Because in fact, what we find is that God is making distinctions everywhere. For instance, he chooses Abraham and he doesn't choose most of the other people on the globe at the time. How many people were alive at the time of Abraham? He chose one. We find that the Bible is very distinctly firstbornist. Now, of course, there are many stories where the person who is born later gets privileged over the firstborn. But it begins with firstbornism, if you like. And I, as a youngest child, could really object to this privileging of firstborn. Or we find that Israel are chosen. Or we find that one tribe, the Levites, get special privileges, and within them one family who get to be priests. Some people are chosen as monarchs. So in fact, the objection that the Bible tends to give particular groups and not all groups certain privileges is not a wide enough or a comprehensive enough objection. If you're really going to object, you've got to object to everything that the Bible is doing. The Bible is also sometimes handist in terms of right and left-handed. This is terrible. But really, what do these objections mean? The objections are basically saying this, that the Creator is not allowed to differentiate the roles, vocations, or favours given to his creatures unless there is something about the creature that requires it. That is what the objection is. There is nothing more than that. It's saying that the Creator cannot do that. And I want to say that central to Christianity is the affirmation of the sovereignty and the freedom of the Creator, that God really is God. And therefore, if God wants to say that men between the age of 21 and a half and age 22 may not drink milk, that's fine. He doesn't need to give us a reason. He hasn't said that, by the way. I know of no verse that says that in any manuscript. But what he says is, secularism is wanting to say, is that the Creator is obliged to treat creatures of the same type equally. Well, I would say he is not under that obligation. He treats us all well. And they also want to say that if the Creator makes any differentiation without cause, then he must be bad, nasty, or unloving. Well, the Bible shows us that what we have is a differentiating God continually. It's one of the repeated core claims of the Bible. So therefore, if your objection is to the differentiating God, all you're really doing is you're saying, my religion is a equality religion. Let's say we're all chemical scum, and it's really important for me that we're all equally chemical scum. I don't want one bit of scum getting above another bit of scum. We're all equally scum. Or you say, no, it's acceptable that there is a God who differentiates. So really, what we find is this objection that the Bible is sexist, at its core, is simply a restatement of secular ideas about equality, which aren't really explored very well, which don't, I would argue, give women any better value. Christians are offering a system of thought in which women are understood to be of infinite value. Is there anyone who can beat that? The Bible also claims, centrally, that every single one of us gets more good than we deserve. How can it be better than that? And then, well, it can be better than that, because it actually says this, that God's people are depicted as female, as the church, for whom God gives his own son. You can't think of any bigger gift than that, that he actually gives his own son for us. And that means that every man and every woman is someone who is of such value that God has given his own son for that person. I cannot think of any higher way of valuing the human race. Thank you.